Hello and welcome to the podcast for episode 104 of Outlander: The Gathering. I'm Ronald D. Moore, executive producer and developer of the new Outlander television show, and I'm here with my lovely wife and costume designer, Terry Dresbach. Say hello.
Hello. Terry. And I'm here with the insane puppy Kulan, who I'm trying to brush while I do this, and it's making snorting noises.
There's also a crackling fire in the background, and please do not adjust your podcast. That is what you're hearing. There's no scotch today because we're recording this in the middle of a very rainy Scottish afternoon.
It could be scotch.
It could be scotch, but it is actually Diet Coke. And the smoking lamp is out.
It's not here.
All right, so The Gathering. This was a big episode.
Big episode.
We always talked about this in the writer's room as being one of the stories in the book that we would turn into an entire episode by itself. That said, there's still a tremendous amount packed into this episode, not just the gathering of the Mackenzie clan, but there's also the boar hunt. There's a lot going on into this story. And it's kind of amazing that we were able to cram everything that takes place in this episode into 1 hour of television.
There's the Mackenzie brooch on the Mackenzie tartan. We had that brooch made. It's quite beautiful.
And the background coat.
Oh, that's Ron's coat.
Yeah, the coat in the back, the blue coat in the background is actually the coat that I wear in my.
Do we think his snarling and snorting will be red?
Yes, I'm sure it will. Okay.
Now, if I'm not mistaken, isn't this the scene where we see her running?
This is the running scene. Okay. This is the opening of the show.
So I'm going to start off with this one because this is just one of that right there. That's one of those moments where a costume designer curls up and dies because those boots that were so heavily featured on camera are Claire's warm-up boots to be never seen on camera, but so the actress doesn't freeze and die in the middle of shooting. That was shot on a second unit, and those boots were never supposed to see the light of day, and there they are, opening the episode. Incredibly frustrating, but one of those things. You cannot have 100% control. You just can't. Oh, there's our clock.
It's our grandfather clock, which was actually wound this week.
It's actually wound. But that's just one of those moments where that you just have to accept it and move on. But it does, it sort of ends up as a red circle in somebody's newspaper.
Yeah, I mean, we try real hard, but again, because it's a second, what we mean by second unit means that that was split off. It was not shot with the main unit, so it did not, that was not actually.
That was not actually Katrina.
It wasn't Katrina.
Was
it wasn't
double.
It may or may not have even been these kids.
Yeah.
It was just feet running.
No, it wasn't.
Through
it. It was just an extra's feet.
And it was shot.
Yeah.
Probably literally weeks.
Oh, weeks and weeks after.
The show was shot.
So it's just one of those things that people think you have control over, but you don't. It's a wonderful, wonderful cape and sleeve, matching sleeve. Just absolutely marvelous. There was a lot of discussion about this, though, because this is early on in shooting, and people were concerned that this outfit made her look fat, if that was even possible.
Which is absurd in and of itself.
But those are the kind of discussions you have to have. You know, you wouldn't be, you'd be surprised.
This location for the field and coming up to the little encampment for the gathering, and then later on after that, when she approaches the castle, this is all shot in and around the actual Dune Castle location. There are these big fields. There's actually also a river that we shoot near periodically near Dune. Dune is a great location for our show. It gives us a lot of elements that we get to repurpose, not just for episodes that take place in and around Leek, but also throughout the series. We find ourselves going out to those areas because you get these great shots of dense forest and so on.
And I should qualify. It's not that it makes that anybody was worried it made Katrina look fat, but that's the kind of, because that's not possible. It's the kind of question one has about getting everybody's eye to change, to adjust to period costumes. That is a very, very different shape than we're used to in modern fashion. As you can see right there, as she's walking along into the encampment, you know, she's got wide hips and then she's got the bell shape on top, and that causes concern for people who are used to a 21st century silhouette. This was one of our early extra days.
This is a great little encampment. Art department put this all together. I like that they took the time to make sure that, you know, if you look at the branches that they've cut to sort of prop up the tents, they're not sawed off at the ends. They're all sort of hatcheted pieces.
There's an arisade, like a woman wearing an arisade, which is the woman's version of a man's kilt. Sorry, go ahead.
That's okay. Whenever I talk about the art department, Terry tends to.
That's not true. I'm the one who says, oh my God, look at what the art department just did. That would be me.
It's very hard. That little cutaway on in this shot of the fiddler just give you an insight into the post-production process. Those are a pain in the ass. You got the extra on the set who may or may not understand how to play that instrument and kind of sawing back and forth with the bow. And then we have to sort of use the takes that come closest to him maintaining an even tempo for a song. And then Barry McCrary, our composer, has to figure out a song that could plausibly be played as a background source piece for all those little cutaways. And it's always such a pain because you're always trying to match. You know, chances are that gentleman was not a professional musician. We gave him a bit of business to do.
Yeah.
And so then him trying to act like he knows how to play a fiddle and to do something approximating an actual song is always a real difficult task.
And you'll notice in these early, early episodes and scenes, almost every single man is wearing a hat, and every woman. Look, as the people walk around, these are the kind of things that you finesse as you begin shooting, and then you you get to know the show and you find your feet. Everybody, art department, costumes, everybody goes, oh, does everyone need to wear a hat? Maybe not, and you'll see those changes happen. Oh, you were talking about this scene.
Oh, yeah, the sticks. We had to play, the sticks... Because, you know, they're using an actual stick on set, obviously, and Katrina's breaking sticks over and over again. And the length of the sticks kept jumping around when we were looking at the cut. And as a result, we had to go in with visual effects and make the lengths of the sticks consistent. It's one of those things that is maddening when you're in editing. Because, you know, when you're doing it on the set, you're breaking that stick 10, 15
times.
One
of those things that when the audience watches, they're like, what's up with the stick?
Yeah, why does the stick get shorter and longer? Right. So with the miracle of digital effects, we could actually have a consistent length, but it became a whole pain. This was a conceptual choice that I fought for a while to sort of bridge the music from 18th century into a 1940s piece. And there was a lot of resistance to that concept for a while, but I really like it and really fought for it. Because my reasoning was that, you know, we're in Claire's point of view for the vast majority of the show. And since the music should then be informed by what she's familiar with. So she's familiar with tunes from the 40s and 30s, arguably the 20s. You know, and I like the idea that when we're with Claire, we would continue to sort of revisit the music that she's familiar with. So even to the point of playing it over 18th century scenes, because I thought it brought in a contemporary touch, but it wasn't a 21st century touch. It was sort of reminding you of where Claire comes from and what her touchstones are.
You know, I think it's great. You know, you know, all you have to do is hear a bit of music and it's stuck in your head for days and days. Whole Lot of Love can be in your brain forever.
Yes.
And, you know, why would all those songs go out of her head just because she time traveled? It wouldn't.
It would. It would still be what she thinks about it.
It's a lovely thing I would have never thought of. It's not in the book that you came up with it. I think it's really, really great.
Yeah, I want to get back to it. I haven't done it in a while since this show, but there hasn't really been an organic opportunity to do it because that scene was specifically about getting home and about, you know, escape and following all the way through the scene. It's still in her head. It's still in her mind. She's thinking about home. She's trying to get back home. And then you'll note as soon as Gayla says her first line, we cut the song like immediately, like pulling the needle off a record.
Now, here's another interesting costume. Now, this is a fantastic, fantastic costume for Gayla's. And the concept we always did with her that Lotta and I came up with is that Gayla's is always dressing up. She's playing dress up. She's assuming a role. Whenever she goes to the next location or meet with the next person, she is presenting a new persona. And this is her sort of lady of the manor. What's Arthur Duncan's title? She's the fiscal's wife. She's the lady of the manor. She's coming to visit and she's assuming a very different role than last time we saw her when she's wearing the red shoes and the monkey vest. But we'll never really see this costume all the way from head to toe, which is also kind of frustrating as a costume designer, but because you had to build it, you had to make it, you had to do the fittings, you had to find the fabric, and so there's a piece of you that wants to see it. You're not going to. It's at a certain point you have to accept that it just becomes clothes. You may or may not see it. That's that.
Yeah, I mean, it's a delicate thing because, you know, there's a common feeling from, I know Gary Steele, our production designer, about the sets that, you know, a lot of times we're shooting the set in a way that maybe it's so dark or it's falling in a shadow and you can't see any of the great details in it, like Gayla's still room, you know, back in Cranesmere.
Yeah, that was a fantastic set.
But you know, we're going with an aesthetic idea that we're using as much natural light as possible. We're trying to light the sets as close to the way they actually would have been lit.
But you could pull the camera back a few feet here.
Well, that's all choices. You know, the director and the DP make a lot of these choices, and also you shoot television in a slightly different way than you would shoot a feature, because in a feature, you'd be blowing these, all these images would be blown up to 30 feet tall, and in that world, you do tend to go wider.
Well, it's true, because Gary and I both come from feature world, so we're used to seeing these things, and often in a period piece, there's an orientation towards, it's a costume drama, so you want to see the costumes. You know, so that becomes a point of contention as well. And I know that a lot of fans are saying, oh, well, how come we don't really see that costume?
And to cop to it, you know, I don't think of it that way. I think of it as it's a character show. And they are clothes. To me, and I treat them and the sets kind of the same way. It's an environment, and it's just clothes that the characters are wearing. So I don't really make much of a concerted effort.
And I agree philosophically with Ron, and I believe, as I've said, and people have heard me say that, you know, I understand the difference between clothes and costumes, and I've made choices that are for clothes, as opposed to, say, Gary tends to be more towards the
theatrical.
But at the same time, you know, it does help create a world in a period piece where the audience is not necessarily familiar with the costumes. It can help to set the feel.
Yeah.
This is the kind of discussion that we have. So we're having it here in front of you. But
I think to your point, I think we could do a better job of pulling back sometimes and being a little wider, and that we could highlight. You know, one of the things that I think people are, now that we're showing the show, you know, now that we're on the air, you start getting feedback from an audience for the first time. And a lot, you know, before the last few weeks, you know, everything was theoretical. It was all in our heads, and it was all about how we view the show. Now you're starting to realize that a big selling point of the show is how gorgeous it is, you know, and how beautiful the costumes are,
how
beautiful the sets are. And yeah, we could probably highlight the world.
And I think that it still works with the idea that they're just clothes, but you're also, people are learning what this environment is, and it's good for them to be able to understand how these things work. You kind of see her costume there a little bit as she turns around. I'll try to, I can't really do a screen grab of it because we don't really see it, but I'm going to start photographing some of these costumes on mannequins so that we can see them. One thing I love here is that we take, that her sleeves don't match her bodice. It's just another way of, to Ron's note, of making it be real and believable, which is ultimately our goal, is to make you as the audience believe what you're seeing and not to feel like you're seeing a fashion show. This isn't Sex and the City. This is not a show where we're all about making sure that the pretty clothes are featured. It's about telling a story, and telling a story about these characters and what they go through.
Great Hall, this was a big episode for the Great Hall. In fact, we kind of built the Great Hall in large measure with an eye towards the Gathering episode. You know, in the early discussions with Gary, we were saying, okay, the hall, the big, you're going to have dinners and such in the Great Hall, but the real function is that for episode 4 in the Gathering, we're going to fill that with Highlanders and people and finery. They're all going to be taking their oaths there. And so he built the Great Hall almost specifically in order to do this
episode. Remarkable. You know, all these fireplaces are real. These rocks.
All the fire's real.
You know, the walls are all built. Those are plaster. Those are rocks made from plaster, right?
Yeah, they're
plaster
all taken.
Plaster molds, the Casa Leoc. And, you know, it's just the fireplaces, everything, the tables. I mean, you know, it's remarkable what they accomplished. Oh, God, how hard did Gary fight for that kind of specific glass that's in those windows?
Well, and if you go to Castle Doon and you walk into their kitchen, our kitchen is
just like that.
Virtually identical. It doesn't have that large window in it. But everything else, the footprint and the hearth and the pass-through arches and all that's the same. And, in fact, the relationship between the kitchen and the Great Hall at Doon is very, very similar. I think we're going on a slightly different door to get into the Great Hall, but the Great Hall is indeed adjacent to the kitchen in Doon Castle. This upcoming shot, there's a little preview of the Shinty game. Okay, this is a big, complicated Steadicam shot down on a crane. All right, there I am.
There's
Ron, that's me. That's me trying to pretend like I'm talking.
Who is 21st Century Kilts.
Yeah, immediately to camera right of me is Howie from 21st Century Kilts, who built all my kilts.
There's Claire in her gathering gown.
And now we're going to follow them up the stairs. You're going to see Diana Gabaldon, and then we're going to pass off onto a crane and go down. So this took forever to set up.
Yeah, and it's interesting because another one of these places where I will go as a costume designer, and again, letting you in on the conversation, there's Diana. But she's wearing Mackenzie tartan. The entire back of her dress has a long panel that's done in Mackenzie tartan, which was a real key point. But we don't see it in that shot. We didn't light her. That's a choice, and it's really difficult to watch as a costume designer. I'm not making a complaint here. It's just there's Galus in her costume. That costume ties to a later point in the script. You want to feature it, but it doesn't always happen the way you want it to.
It's tricky. You know, sometimes, you know, lighting takes a long time on sets. Setting up a very complex shot like that took hours, literally, to rehearse and get everything done. And as a result, when you spend time, especially in a television show, when you spend that kind of time in production concentrating on one single shot like that,
people don't want to think about costumes.
You end up not doing as much coverage. You end up not, you know, being able to do other lighting for other pieces, and something has to fall by the wayside. So,
and this show,
in retrospect, I probably wouldn't do that again. It's a big, beautiful shot. I get it. I think it was a great idea, but I think if I had to go back into this episode, I would probably have said, let's not do that, and let's spend more time doing coverage, you know, around the room and setting up other people and lighting.
But we made a lot of specialty costumes. See, like, there's three women in blue all standing together. Oh, my God. We made specialty costumes for this shot, spent, you know, a lot of time and resources doing it, and we don't really see them. Which is okay. You just have to try to understand that before you start. But we were very much still in a learning curve again at this point.
And we
were really finding our feet. We were just making sure people weren't naked. And this is the first time we went beyond making sure people weren't naked and tried to actually really start designing. There goes our clock again.
And again, not so much. The reason not to do that shot is not just for costumes.
Right.
It's for coverage. Because coming up here in a minute, when we get to the section where Claire walks back downstairs and takes off with Angus, we don't have a lot of coverage of Colm getting the oath from other Highlanders, and we're missing sort of other angles. And retrospectively, I can look at it and say, you know, I wish I had more other shots and other pieces in the hall of other people doing other things, and that would probably have been time to better spent than that one big beauty shot. But you know what? These are decisions you make along the way. Brian set up a gorgeous shot, and I was all for it. And it's not like, oh, you know, he ran away with it. It was just, he set that up. I thought it was worth time doing it on the day and improved and say, yeah, let's go for it. And then, you know, but then weeks later, then you start putting the scene together, and then you kind of go, oh, okay, by doing that, it cost you time over here.
And we're also finding our feet again. You know, we worked tremendously hard to almost paint into the screen how colors are moved around. You work really hard, and then there you go. There are three people standing in the exact same color next to each other. One, two, three blue dresses in a row right there. You don't want that. You always try hard not to do that. But on a day like this, with as many people as there were, our first time out, that kind of thing happens. And so discussing it here is really about kind of letting you into our process and the kind of thing that we try to work out. Letitia, I mean, her costumes were magnificent all the way through this show. I don't know if we ever see a shot of the woman standing up, ever, in any episode.
We're doing nine. You get a big, nice, gorgeous shot of her and Colm standing together.
Oh, good. Good, I haven't seen that one yet. Yeah. Colm, we really went to town on Colm's costume, sort of when we started establishing him as very different from Colm, and very flamboyant and over the top, and he has beautiful rhinestone buttons and incredible trim. You just really don't see much of it, but it's there. Again, I'll take pictures of it, and see, there they are again, those blue costumes. Ah! Microphone going over. But I will say this, is that then when you step back to the big picture, you don't really, you know, I see it. Ron sees it. My team will see it. But, you know, will you, the audience, go, oh, my gosh, look at that? Probably not.
Definitely not. the audience is, and as executive producer, you're always looking at the show with a couple of different minds, and one of them
and you do.
Is the audience. You know,
and that's your job as a costume designer, too.
And you get away with a tremendous amount. It's
you
like
do.
It's always astonishing.
Except
we
for those
see
three blue women.
We see a lot of flaws that the audience is not paying attention to because they should be paying attention to the story.
To the story and what people are saying.
Yes.
But it is part of your job, too, as administration, is to, you know, figure out how you're using your resources and your time and your money. So you go back and you go, how much time, money, and effort did we put into things that never actually end up in camera? And that's part of learning the show you're on. And you do that on camera, not off camera.
Right. Now, you'll notice that the oaths that they give to Colm are in English as opposed to Gaelic. And that was a choice we talked about quite a bit as we were developing the script. We wanted the big speech from Colm to be in Gaelic to the hall and talking to everyone in Gaelic, and that's kind of the mode that we've operated in. However, it was important later in this episode that Jamie's speech to Colm, where he finds a clever way to get out of giving his oath without getting killed, we needed to hear that in English, because at that point we didn't want to be cutting back to Murtaugh explaining what he's saying to Claire. That would have really cut up the drama. So we knew that part had to be in English. And the only way that that made sense for him to be saying that piece in English was for all the oaths to be in English, so it didn't pop out as a strange thing. And that has a little bit, there's a slight disconnect between, okay, what's the consistency of Gaelic in this world? And overall, I just have always taken the idea that, you know, we're going to use Gaelic as texture and to sort of use it where it feels appropriate, but we weren't going to be married into it, you know, consistently one way or the other, that you were always sort of going back and forth, you know, playing it by ear as you went through scene by scene.
This is the first time that we actually made something for Katrina that we could all say they actually made a gown for her. This is not something that they found. Mrs. Fitz actually had something beautiful made for her for this event.
This is a great scene. This is like the two of them together. You know, Stephen, who plays Angus, is an inveterate scene stealer, I must say. The man should be arrested because he just steals scenes because
he's so
funny. But she's right there with him.
Yeah.
It's like the two of them, neither one is gonna give up the scene to the other one. And it's just great because they riff off of each other and their takes. And, you know, it's really fun to see, to let Kat play comedy because she's really good. She's really good at comedy. There's not much she's not good at, which is the scary
thing. She's extraordinary. And we do love her.
Angus. I love Angus so much.
I know.
That's great. I'm gargling with him. The escape attempt, you know, from Castle Lake is definitely something that's in the book, you know, that this is Claire's big chance. And what we just wanted to do is we wanted to sort of elaborate on the plan a little bit so that it provided sort of a frame for the plot, that you were sort of tracking the planning and execution of her escape.
And all the conversation, remember, in the script it said she takes all the things and puts them inside her skirt. And we were like, how does that work exactly? Remember?
Yeah,
remember
I thought
that?
It was always a bag.
No, there was never a bag. The bag is supposed to go under her skirt. And we're like, what's she doing, zipping that in? This was a costume we did for Larry with the idea that, you know, again, Mrs. Fitz and Larry's mother went, you know what, this is a great place to find a husband. We're going to dress her up and put her out there. And we, you know, tried to find something that really spoke to the ingenue, to the pretty young girl. This is her best dress.
This is a good example of doing a reshoot later that's sort of seamless to the audience. Every time we cut to Kat's side, where you're seeing Kat on camera, and every time you're seeing Lyra on camera, are shot on completely different days. We shot them originally on the same day, but the background behind Leary, it turned out, was incorrect. We had the wrong backdrop back there, and it would have looked like Claire's apothecary had moved locations in the castle. So we had to come back some weeks later and redo just Leary's side of it. So that's really Kat standing on her, that's really her shoulder you're seeing in foreground, and then Leary in the background.
That's not Kat.
But that's, no, that is Kat, because she was there.
Oh, yeah, she was.
But every time we go this direction, where you're going over Leary to Kat, was shot weeks previous.
Right.
So you're just kind of, through movie magic, you're just kind of creating a scene that appears to take place, you know, in the same moment. Good look at the big apothecary cabinet here that Gary's team had made for the shop. I love that piece. It's such a beautiful, it feels like a completely vintage piece.
Well, Gary and I started working on that. We made the lookbook for the show when Ron originally pitched the show. We made a book that had basically told the story just in images and found apothecary cabinets that we were in love with. And a lot of the pieces you see that he's used come from way back when. I love this.
I think this might be our first Wizard of Oz reference in the show.
Unlike the red shoes. A lot of people thought it was the red shoes.
You're talking about Galus's red shoes?
Yeah, but he was saying it's got to be a Wizard of Oz reference. It actually was not.
Yeah, but this is definitely, this is an overt Wizard of Oz reference, which, you know, was clearly a movie that Claire would have seen. It was a hugely popular film, and, you know, it was one of the biggest films of all time. And she definitely would know that reference, and it seemed like a fun little piece to drop in there.
Piece, and it is. You know, Claire kind of is Dorothy. You know, she has been dropped in. This, we made this cloak for this scene. We needed to have a way that Claire could hide her all those things she stole. And so this cloak was it. And we also needed something to keep Katrina, the actress, warm on all these exterior scenes because it was freezing out there.
This is all straight from the book, this whole encounter with the Highlanders and then Dougal, and Dougal making a pass at her. And
getting is that smacked what you call it, a pass?
Makes a pass at her.
Makes it a little warm, a pass.
And then getting smacked on the head. This is all drawn straight from the book.
She thinks he's going to protect her.
Well, he did. For a moment.
For a moment.
Because he's plowed. He's like pretty plowed, old Dougal here. Deep in his cups, as we say.
Is that what we say?
Yeah. Now, is that brooch that we saw at the very beginning, is that Dougal's brooch? The one that was in the title card? In the main title? That's Dougal's,
yeah, that's
right?
The Mackenzie brooch.
That's the Mackenzie brooch.
Because this is a Mackenzie event.
Right. Is there just one version of it? Or
There's only one version of it, and it was designed based on the Mackenzie crest that Gary had developed. So Gary develops a crest, and then we take that crest and reinterpret it into a jewelry form.
That's the same crest that's over the fireplace in the Great Hall?
Yeah, pretty much. There's a few adjustments you have to make when you're doing a piece of jewelry versus, but you make sure that all the key elements are there.
Where
are you going?
I'll just look in here. No, you won't.
Uh-oh, there's my dry, unproductive cough. I have nothing to drink.
Drink your Diet Coke, dear.
It's gone.
You drank it already?
I don't like it when it gets warm.
That's why you put ice in it.
I don't like ice in my drinks. It's not good for your stomach.
Oh, dear, you're from California. That's what we do. We put ice in everything.
Not in San Francisco, you don't. Anyway, that is not relevant to what we're doing.
Anyway, okay, so now we're in the escape tent. This is the courtyard at Castle Dune at night, which is a very cold place to shoot.
Oh, my God.
The mud is real. The wind is real. This is a freezing night.
I don't know if I can emphasize just how cold it was.
Yeah, it's really cold. It's a very cold place.
So, again, another reason to build
This is a location, the interior of the stable. You can tell because you can see their breath all the way through this. And this, too, was a icy location. This moment is sort of iconic from the book of her tripping over him in the stable and literally tripping up her escape attempt and having to shepherd her back to the castle. Sort of one of the more charming aspects of the book.
I do love this scene.
You know, it's another step in the development of the relationship between Claire and Jamie. And, again, we're simply playing them as friends and people that they kind of like. You know, she didn't plan the escape attempt with him. He wasn't in on it. It's not like he's been secretly trying to help her all the way. There's just this sort of natural, organic relationship that's kind of forming out of moments like this, which I thought
just
was
like you and me.
A great element in the book.
Ours was over costumes.
You just always tripped over me in the dark.
Yeah, well, actually, it's reversed. You're the one.
A really good moment for Jamie coming up. I really like the way Sam plays this moment. You know, when he hears about, we're not quite there yet, but when he hears about Dougal and he laughs and just the way he blows it off. And then her response to him, this is a good chemistry scene. This is what, when you talk about actors having chemistry on camera, it's not so much about how they make out and sexually and all that kind of stuff, although that's important. It's a moment like this. Here's just the two characters, and it's how each of them is seeing the cues and kind of feeding back emotion and, you know, little nuances and who laughs when and how they look at each other. And you can just kind of feel the chemistry between Sam and Katrina. They have a nice interaction, and it's believable, and you buy into a relationship. You intuitively sense as an audience member that they like each other, that the, you know, the actors are not pretending to like each other, which is a very important thing, and they do like each other.
You know, Sam and I were talking about this the other day, because he'd seen the episodes, and so had I, and how we were both struck by the journey, almost the physical journey that I was speaking about earlier, that our actors have made as actors and as characters, and that they are so different now than they were then. And you can really see, you know, for the audience who goes back and rewatches this entire show, you'll see this journey that our cast goes through.
Right there, when Sam laughs, and the way she responds to it, he comes up. See, this is just him being charming, and it's charming in an honest way. He's not charming her; he's just charming. And then look at her response. She kind of feeds off of that and lets her smile. And this is just the two actors on set creating this little, this moment that makes you, the audience, feel like you're literally eavesdropping in on a real relationship. Nice touch is that she still has straw in her hair from when she fell. Now they're going to go back out to literally outside Castle Dune. That's really Dune in the background. We went into the castle and had them set up lights because those rooms are not lit normally. We had them put lights in windows so that we could get that shot. This was a very, very cold night as well. A lot of mud out there. All the camera crew and trucks are way off beyond the right side of your screen. There's a whole encampment over there with giant light giving you some moonlight being projected on the top of a big crane. That little hole that he's looking in really does exist there. That's just something we found that seemed like it was going to work really well. This was a particularly late shoot, as I recall.
Wow, it's a good thing we wound that clock.
Yeah, glad we wound the clock for all of you. And kaboom. Thank you, Rupert.
This is one of those scenes that gets endlessly discussed.
This scene?
Yeah.
Why?
Well, if you remember, this was...
Oh, you mean, you mean in production?
In production. Oh. Yeah. What are we going to have him wear? How are we going to manage this? Which tartan is he going to wear? Which, you know, how dressed up, how not dressed up.
Oh, and his back scars. Are we going to see the back? You know, we're going to see the back there.
Is he going to wear the brooch? He's not going to wear the brooch. But what if we do that? How are we going
to pick up that insert of the brooch, you know, much later?
Yeah, we had to make that.
Yeah, it wasn't ready, I don't think.
It wasn't ready.
We have to, so that back scar shot took an hour to prepare for. So, you know, that's just a lot of time with Sam and makeup.
And we spend a lot of time in production meetings that we have on every block, discussing what we're going to be doing in the upcoming block. And there's a lot of discussion about, okay, are we going to see the back? Or are we not going to see the back? How long are we going to see the back? Back's going to take 2 hours. We're going to have to stop and go put the back on.
Yeah. There's a lot of discussion on all the elements. Production meetings on this show take a long time.
Half a day.
Because we have to go through, we shoot them in blocks of two, so we have to discuss both episodes. And it takes hours. It takes hours to go through the entire show, all the scenes, talking about how you're going to shoot it, in what order, where the truck's going to be, who's going to change.
Where are we going to get this? Who's changing? What are they wearing? What happens when, you know, Katrina jumps into the water wearing 5,000 pounds of clothing? What happens if we, you know, are burning the cross? What happens if...
Okay, here's another scene in the Great Hall. This is... How many extras are in that scene? This is the most we ever had.
300 extras.
300 extras in that scene. It got incredibly hot in there.
Brutally hot.
Especially in the earlier scene when it was in daytime and the outside lights were much hotter to simulate daytime.
Well, and everybody's wearing layers and layers of wool.
We have all this
velvet.
Wool. We also have all the torches, all the candles, and three big, fully functioning fireplaces. That combined with all the bodies in the room, combined with, you know...
Just unbelievable.
It was just unbelievably hot. In the middle of the winter. We shot January?
And you have to... The trick is... And then what... I don't know if you mentioned this, but what... pushes it over the edge are the lights.
Well, it's a very simple lights.
Yeah, you have the lights. So you have to dress the extras as if it is
cold
in that hall. The fireplace gives only so much heat, and you can't suddenly put everybody in shirt sleeves.
And it's much worse when you're looking out the when the windows are supposed to be daylight, because you need hotter lights to simulate daylight out those giant windows in the set.
I remember at some point somebody said, well, can't you get fabrics that look like wool that aren't wool? Well, not really. It's important to have authenticity here.
This sequence, there's a lot of, if you looked at the script, this didn't lay out exactly like it's cut here. We played around with this cutting quite a bit in post. Michael Halloran, our editor, played around with this quite a bit to adjust the timing of, I wanted the timing to be slightly different so that Murtaugh's explanation to Claire about what's going on was timed with Jamie's movement through the line leading up to him getting to where Dougal and Colm are. It's complicated. The editing process can take a long time to move characters across a scene while cutting to another place, you know, and hearing dialogue, making the dialogue appear to be continuous. You don't want obvious big holes in what they're talking about that giving you time to move the character in a line like this forward, and then figuring out where the extras are and not doubling up on the extras and cutaway shots. Yeah. You know, it's tricky. This was an elaborate little section to sort of cut and recut in terms of editing. And then you've got things like Colm lifting the bowl of whiskey and where are his hands when you go back. You know, if you're cutting back and he's had it in his hands and on the next shot it's near his mouth, that's going to feel like a jump. So it takes a while to sort of work this kind of stuff through.
This is the only time you will see Dougal wearing anything other than Murtaugh. That's the only, Murtaugh wears the same outfit throughout the entire show except for this scene. This is the only time we ever see him
wearing anything. That's his special coat.
Yeah, this is the coat that we sort of decided, you know, he might have gotten from his father or his uncle, and he keeps it rolled up in his saddlebag somewhere.
He doesn't wear it to the wedding?
He does not wear it to anything other than this.
This is drawn straight from the book. I think the dialogue is very close to word for word. We probably played around with it, you know, and just edited it and shaped it slightly. But basically, this is what he said in the book when he's getting out of this sticky situation.
It's really interesting. There's one extra who's, you know, sometimes extras really want to be on camera. And so they're always right there. There's one woman in here. She appears in shot after shot after shot. There's the brooch that Galus is wearing is an important piece that we use that you'll see connecting to another scene later on. But that is Bonnie Prince Charlie's eye in that brooch. One of the 18th century pieces of jewelry that was very common was to wear a piece of jewelry that had a painting of the eye of your loved one.
I like that we cut. There were more lines there. There was more dialogue from Colm and back and forth.
There she is.
And decided to sort of trim it down and play it really just in looks. This is one of those great beats where you can just let the actor's face tell the story of his looking and his brother, and just letting the scene sort of play out in silence until he picks up the bowl and gives him the whiskey.
Well, it's a great scene. It's a great place where you start to really begin to get who these people are, and that Jamie is not all that you thought he was, and that he's a very clever man.
And then let's party. They bring down the disco ball.
And this is a place where all of a sudden Dougal doesn't have a beard anymore, which you
mean Colm.
Colm, I'm sorry. I think my name's all mixed up today.
Yeah, I decided I wasn't happy with Colm's look. Just sort of went, kind of felt like the beard and the loose hair wasn't right. And so the gathering felt like a good opportunity to sort of reset him. And, you know, it made sense to me because, you know, he decides that for this big, important, once-in-a-generation ceremony, he shaves and pulls his hair back. And we just use that as an excuse to sort of change Colm's look for the rest of the show. That's one of the adjustments you just try to make along the way. You look at any first-year TV show and compare it to later seasons, you're always going to see changes in hair and makeup and, you know, and clothing. Because, Pete, you learn. You start looking
at
the characters on camera and you start saying, you know, I'd rather do this, or can we change that? And then you find opportunities to sort of make it happen without drawing attention to it.
And this is so early in still on our
This is all very early in the show. It's the second block.
Yeah, we're really learning what we're doing at this point.
Again, we're going back to the 40s music as sort of a way of just returning to Claire's point of view. And there's also something, an interesting kind of shift in mood to kind of, you know, take the audience a little bit unaware about what's going to happen, that we sort of go to this more, you know, this sort of clarinet or whatever's playing there in the background and Claire's attitude and playing it more for humor to kind of lull you into a different state here so that you're not quite, you don't really see what's coming with this boar hunt and what's ultimately.
But I have to say that there's, like, right there when she does that with that basket, I always feel that this is the scene, this is the part of the show where we start to really figure out who we are and what it is we're doing. There was something about this that all the elements found their way.
Yeah, this was the show.
Very,
that,
very believable. Really, really lovely.
This is when the show is starting to figure itself out. It's like you can sense that we have more confidence. We know what we're doing. We have a clear direction. We've done an entire block is already under our belt. Okay, we're moving forward and we're getting bigger and more ambitious. And you just kind of feel the confidence of the show growing through this episode. We are adding the boar tusks under these shots of the boars. The live boars did not actually have boar tusks. So in visual effects, we gave them all little pointy things coming out of their mouths, like right there. That's not real. Then there's that. All those are added by our visual effects artists.
That's really good, because I would never expect that. See? I love this outfit of hers. And again, this is where I feel like we as a team started to find our feet. You know, you just believe this costume.
There's certain anachronisms in the show that we accept, you know,
like they were not boars,
you know, our historian said that the boars were
all
gone. It was
not your historian, it was my team.
It was your team. Oh, the historian was talking about something else, I guess. It was around the same time, but it was the wolves.
Yeah, we were doing some research, and Graham Hunter on our team discovered there were no boars. We brought it to Ron.
For a moment I said, okay, well, if there were no boars, maybe we can make this a stag hunt. Because that would tie in with the antlers in Castle Leah, because there's a lot of stag iconography through the show, right from the main title even. And we did talk about it for a little while, about making this a stag hunt, and that, you know, they would be gored by a stag that they got cornered or turned on them in rutting in mating season or something. And ultimately, it became too complicated. And it also felt like, you know what, okay, it's an anachronism, but it's in the book, and we're just going to kind of go with it. And, you know, ultimately, I have to make those decisions a lot, where are we varying from the book and where are we not? What's an anachronism that we're going to accept and what is not? And there's really no list of how it's done. I just kind of do it by gut instinct of what I think matters and what I think doesn't and what's important and what's not. And, you know, your mileage may vary because a lot of a different executive producer would make those calls probably, you know, slightly differently. But I just have to go with what I think is works best for the show. You might be able to hear the rain in the background pounding on the...
Pouring.
It's pouring rain outside of our house at this moment.
The fire's going out. Oh.
Yeah, the fire went from popping and smacking to glowing embers.
Because we have not maintained it. Yeah,
This is a great scene.
Great in the book, great on our show.
I was adamant on the point that I did not want to meet Geordi, the dying gentleman, earlier in the story. I didn't want to set him up only to kill him. And the scene is not about him to me. The scene is about Dougal and Claire. It's about how they handle this and their reaction to this man's death, especially Dougal, because it's the first time we see any kind of humanity, real humanity, from Dougal. The man has a heart.
No, I think you first see it when he's playing with those kids.
Oh, yeah. But yeah. In a deeper sense, you see it here.
But you get a sense that it's a complex character.
Yeah.
And as I always say, nobody gets up in the morning and says, I'm going to go be evil today.
And it's not about, so as a result, it's not about you don't care who Geordi is. You don't need to set him up, invest in him, and then feel his death. I'm not asking the audience to feel the death of Geordi. I'm asking the audience to feel Dougal's loss.
Yeah.
And Claire.
And Dougal's care.
And Dougal's care and Claire seeing
and
that.
That moment there where he unties the tourniquet.
And it's about bonding the two characters together. It's not about whether or not you care about Geordi. You care because he cares and because she cares. And he does a lovely job. This actor does a really great job.
He really does.
As Geordi goes.
It's a scene filled with the love of a commander for the men who serve under him.
Yeah.
And you know, as a battlefield scene you can imagine happening across the centuries. And gives you a dimension in Dougal that makes it so much more interesting. He's a complicated man. You know, he's in a world where you have to make difficult choices and decisions. Can you second guess them and say he's just a bad guy? I guess you can do that. Can you say Frank's just a bad guy? I guess you can.
Well,
if you look deeper, you find a human in there.
It also says something, you know, I think about these people in that, yes, they're more familiar with death. Death is a more, you know, constant companion to them than it is for us. And so...
Yeah, they're not rushing him back to the hospital. I think
it's not so much that they don't care about death. I think that it's not that they're, that death doesn't matter to them. They're just, it's more familiar to them.
But
I think it still affects them just as deeply as it affects us.
But in a weird way, ours is, you know, our meat comes packaged in plastic wrap in the grocery store. He's looking at me all funny.
I don't know what that means.
Death is something that happens in a hospital in a very sterile environment a lot of the time. And this death is very real. And it's the line where he says to her later, you know, you've seen death before. There's something about it.
I also love that little beat.
How many of us see people die?
I love that little beat where the guy, Jordy, says, I want to ask you something, Dougal. And he says, did you bed my sister?
Yeah, that's great.
And Dougal kind of looks at him and almost laughs and says, well, yeah, I did.
She was pretty.
My sister Doreen. That's like an in-joke between my producing partner, Meryl, and I. I introduced these characters, Doreen and Boyle, into a script of a pilot that I did called 17th Precinct, and she always made fun of me for those two names of these kids, Doreen and Boyle. So now I find ways...
Ron's notorious for being bad with names.
So now I find ways of sneaking both the names Doreen and Boyle into any subsequent project that I do, which is just kind of a running joke between Meryl and I.
The care here of help, of ushering him out of life is just a very... It's a beautiful way of dealing with death.
It's a great scene. This is a really good scene in the entire series, I think.
He's holding him the way a man would hold a child or an infant, and
it's very intimate.
Physicality, there's an intimacy between two men on camera that's not seen very often. Clock.
You know, chiming, announcing George's death.
And it's a moment that these two people share. And I love the Highlander takes off his bonnet right there.
Yeah, that's nice.
I don't even know if that was planned.
I don't know.
Just one of those things.
And then now we're going back through the village that we had,
the little encampment we established earlier. You keep that boar.
Oh, yeah, they're not getting rid of the boar.
No.
I like the choice of Claire walking the horse. You know, that there's just a somber sort of sense of respect and dignity here. These old men all coming back. And the Shinty game. Shinty was not in the book, but it was somebody's research. I think it was somebody in the writer's room started talking about Shinty was this traditional game that's sort of like a field hockey or the roots of field hockey, where basically these guys run around with sticks, hitting the ball and mostly hitting each other.
And we hear about it, and we do our little research, and this is a game that was played barefoot.
Yeah.
And our actors, of course, were all gung-ho to play it barefoot. And we were like, no. Yeah,
because
no.
Because running around.
It's freezing. For one thing, we were worried that everybody was going to get hypothermia and cut, and then you wouldn't be able to shoot the rest of the show because somebody tripped over a fire in their bare feet.
Well, they'd be running around with stones, and it was just like, we're not doing it barefoot.
And then it was, well, what do we do? At one point, we were looking for, you know, hobbit feet that didn't have fur on top of them, so that people would have fake feet. And then we finally made the decision, you know what, these guys are just going to do it in their shoes, which, you know, is a bit of a challenge, but we did it.
And most of the players in the scene, other than the principals, you know, Jamie's and Angus, and Murtaugh and Dougal, are real Shinty players who actually play this game, because it is a traditional game that's still played today. So they came out and helped it set the scene up so everything.
It's always fascinating
because
you get real Shinty players, and suddenly you're dressing them all in kilts and stuff, and they're playing Shinty, which they've played before, but suddenly they're doing it in period clothing. So there's always this little adjustment on everyone's part.
And this was another notch in sort of this developing story between Jamie and Dougal, which I thought was really interesting. in not a piece that's in the book, but there's this underlying tension about the succession to Colm and their competition with each other, even though they're uncle and nephew. Love that.
After watching all of this, I still don't know what's the purpose of the game, to kill each other, or is there a ball involved?
There's a ball.
It's
somewhere.
Just like, you know, suddenly people are just running at each other and clubbing each other.
Yeah, it's more about that. And we destroyed, I don't know how many of those sticks, because we could only use the wooden sticks for certain scenes, because, you know, you don't want them really using wooden sticks when they're hitting each other.
And the father becomes stronger than the son. The son becomes stronger than the father.
So we used rubber sticks and foam sticks for big chunks of it, and we destroyed those foam sticks inside of, like, the first half hour.
Yeah.
I love this bit at the very end as they're walking off the pitch field that he just says, did we win? And there's no answer to it. People kept saying, well, shouldn't they answer? Shouldn't they say? I said, it's so beside the point. The joke is that he doesn't know whether they won. I doubt
sure,
that any of them know
the
winner.
But that's
what
I'm saying. I'm not sure there is a winning. Okay, so this... Did I talk about this in a previous episode? Her surgery garments? I don't remember. God, am I going to be redundant now? I don't think so, but this is a garment that we made for Claire. That the idea was that Claire was looking around for something that provided her with familiarity. As a nurse, she would put on a nurse's uniform in the 1940s. We tried to assume that Claire, in an unfamiliar environment, held captive in this castle, but given this job, was at least this is something she knew, but she was going to find a garment to put on every single day to do her work in. So you'll see her anytime Claire is in the surgery, she's wearing this. And the idea is that somehow, at the end of the day, she hangs it up on the hook and gets back into her regular clothing. And it's even a different fabric than we're used to seeing. This is actually called a jump, which was a kind of a set of stays that you wouldn't wear out in public. So it's a bit of a scandal that she's doing this.
It's a nice little bit of rapprochement between Dougal and Claire in this scene, which I thought was a lovely touch. I think in the book it was a little more offhand. I think he just kind of said, you're coming along with us on the road. And I thought it'd be nice if we made a little bit more of an emotional connection, that it comes straight off of the boar, the incident with the boar, you know, to get to this beat. I love it when he's kind of pleased with himself. So like, oh yeah, I got a surprise for you, lady. And as I'll talk about on the next podcast for episode 5, when we shot this, we actually kept shooting in Castle Leek because we had other Castle Leek episodes. So we shot them out of sequence. So from this point, by the time we finished the Gathering episode, we suddenly jumped ahead in the story in production terms and went all the way to episode 109 and 110 and skipped the middle section of the show and then came back to it later. Which was a bit disorienting, but it did keep us at Castle Leek, which became sort of home. And I think all of us still kind of feel like Castle Leek is the home of the show because we were there for a lot longer span than probably any other sets in the whole season. And it's kind of funny to go back and see this now and sort of go, oh yeah, God, Leek, that's when we were home. We shot those when we were back home. You know? This exterior, again, literally outside of Castle Leek, in color timing, I made this much more pre-dawn because this was actually shot later in the day. But the feeling here is that it's supposed to be, he says, at first light we're taken out. So I wanted this to feel as close to first light as we could get away with. And also I wanted to match into the last shot that Brian set up coming up when we're on their backs and they're going away from camera. The shot that I call the John Ford shot.
That
shot right there.
Coat that Kat is wearing is something we had to build for Kat, not Claire, to deal with just how cold it was out there and the fact that this actress was about to be out in the woods in the cold of Scotland.
I love that last shot. I held the shot as long as I possibly could because I think just at the point that I start to cut, I think something happened in the take, and there was like another cart came into frame or something, but I wanted to hold that as long as humanly possible. So that's episode 104,
The
Gathering. It's a great episode. I hope everyone enjoyed it. And we will be talking to you again next week on 105, Rent.
Ah, one of my favorites.
Until then, thank you for joining us. I'm Robbie Moore. That's Terry Dresback. And we'll talk to you soon. Good night.